It's Rock of Southern California, 95.5 KLOS. Got Nikki Six checking in. He's got so much going on. Nikki, you there? Hey.
Hey, Marcy. How are you?
Hey. How are you? I'm good. I'm good. Things are feeling good.
Yeah, in life?
In life, post-pandemic. Well, are we post-pandemic?
I'm post-pandemic because I can't see a house for as far as I can look, so I'm in the middle of nowhere in Wyoming, so I'm good.
So you may not know if that Delta A-hole variant is starting to cause problems there in Wyoming.
There could be an apocalypse, and I wouldn't know about it here. I'd be like, why is my Wi-Fi out? My wife's like, didn't you hear about the apocalypse?
It's probably pretty awesome. Big, wide open spaces, fresh air.
Yeah, it really has been amazing for my creativity, too. So that's really exciting.
You've got so much happening right now. A new book, a merch line, the La Rats Project, as John 5 called it last week. There's this little band called Motley Crue. So, you got a lot going on. Your first memoir will be out October 19th, titled First 21, How I Became Nikki Six. Fans can pre-order the book now at NikkiSixOfficial.com. And this is the story of your life before you became one of the world's biggest rock stars. So let's go back to the beginning. I mean, where does this pick up?
Yeah. Well, I've had a lot of success writing books. I'm like a born writer. That's like since I was a kid, and we really discovered this during the writing of the book, especially that I've been writing since I was like a little kid. Family members would be talking about how I always had these notepads, and I specifically was talking to a stepdad when I had left Idaho and gone to Seattle. That was like my first hit of a big city.
Yeah.
And he said, like, we would be like with the family, and like somebody would say something, and I was like this kid with like my hair in my eyes, and I would just write down stuff, and they were like, who is this weird kid? But it's like that. In my heart, like, I like to document stuff.
Yeah.
I like to make notes, and then it turns up in books and songs and poetry, and I don't know. I love words. So I was sitting on, like, the back 20 acres of my property, and it was this beautiful day last year, and I had this, like, fleeting thought. I thought, I left Idaho over 40 years ago on a Greyhound bus to go to Los Angeles, California.
Yeah.
With this idea of starting, you know, the most dangerous band in the world. That's what I said.
Yeah.
I want to start the most dangerous rock and roll band in the world that leans on all of my favorite bands and Cheap Trick and Aerosmith and Queen and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that story's already been told. So it is what it is. And I was sitting back there and I just went, where did everybody go? And I started writing this poem that I read to my aunt. She started crying.
Aww.
And I was like, in the poem, I had said something along the lines of, you know, I'm sorry, it's just that once I started flying, I forgot how to stop. And it was just about how I just got in this jet stream and 40 years passed. And of course, I stay in contact with my family and stuff.
Yeah.
But to go back and retrace those first 21 years through my family, through friends, through all these people that were in my life, and a lot of them to corroborate some of the things that in my mind, I was like, well, I remember thinking this. I remember thinking this. And people saying, well, this is the kind of stuff that you would talk about when you were a young kid. And I have this way of writing, however I'm writing. And some people have always joked around and said, it looks like I'm conjuring up the devil or something, but I surround myself in books. It's a really weird thing.
Mm-mm.
I find an area and I put everything from a Bible to a mechanic book to, you know, whatever, how to do whatever. And I have a lot of antique books too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be writing. I always sit on the floor and I write, and I believe in stream of consciousness. So I don't believe in stopping. I don't believe in a rhyming dictionary. If you look at a lot of Motley Crue lyrics, they actually don't rhyme.
Yeah.
They do to me, you know? So I'm writing. And when I get stuck, Marcy, what I do is I reach for a book I open it, I put my finger down on a page, and I look at a word mm-hmm. and a sentence, and I have to use it right there, whatever it is, even though it might be out of context. And I keep writing, and usually what I'll do is write about four pages, and then I go back and I look at it, and I'm like, oh, okay, there's the heartbeat of what I'm trying to say. But I wasn't like, the dog ran up the hill, the dog took too many pills.
Right,
like,
right.
I don't do that. I just go. And so like my stepfather was saying, yeah, when you were like 13 years old, we'd come in the room and you were doing this weird thing. And then like that's when I was like learning how to play guitar, and like I was connecting the dots. So it's interesting, you go all the way back, and we traveled a lot, and we were, you know, extremely poor is a bad word, but we were struggling our whole life. We lived in trailers and moved from job to job. So but that gave me strength, and it gave me appreciation of my family and of my surroundings. So, you know, I think that for me, I believe that we all within our first 21 years have figured out kind of what we want to do.
Yeah, sure.
And I was trying to unveil that through my story. And a lot of people on my team that have read the book are like, I can see my story in here. So it's about this kid named Frank Farana, whose parents were immigrants.
Right.
You know, family was immigrants. But it's also about like what we all go through as youth, and a lot of discovery of music, which I'm sure you'll find a lot of fun.
Yeah, I don't think that's weird at all to surround yourself with books, and I think that writing process is pretty cool. It's almost like your own little writing game. If you get stumped, or you know, the way that you went about that's very cool. So would you say this experience was more positive? Was it tough emotionally?
Yeah.
Where was it on the scale?
No, a very positive experience.
Cool.
You know, there's a lot been written about, you know, it's at some point, you know, I found myself addicted to drugs, and I decided to release those diaries and document that and hopefully help people that that have addiction or have addiction in their life or are looking for recovery. So that's all that was about, and that really connected with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
This one is different. It's kind of like, you know, I stole like my first guitar.
Oh,
to be honest with you, you know,
yeah,
because we couldn't afford one, and it's kind of like Huckleberry Finn, believe it or not, with a stolen guitar. It's pretty uplifting and pretty fun, and I laugh at myself a lot, which I think we need to do.
I agree. You moved around a lot as a kid. What I have to know, Nikki Sixx, Frank Farana, did you milk cows?
I've milked a cow. Have you?
I have milked a cow on my aunt has a ranch.
Okay.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, she lives in Wyoming.
Steve, we're look at this. We're bonding right here. We got you're milking cows in Wyoming. I haven't milked a cow in Wyoming yet, but I'm sure I will.
Yeah, and then you have to squirt it in your mouth a little bit, get the real, you know.
Oh yeah,
real
all
experience.
That all that stuff.
Nikki Sixx on the phone with me.
I find that as I've, you know, matured as an artist and stuff, the simplicity is what spurs the creativity. And clutter and noise and drama and people that are crazy, I try to just kind of carve out my own little space, like that little writing thing that I do. You know, I try to carve out a space and really surround myself by super positive people and always be open to new ideas, just open to the ideas coming in, you know, whether they're mine or somebody else's. Nothing I love better when I go to sit down to work, like with a band, any band that I've been in or Motley Crue, and somebody goes, "I got a song," and you're like, "Great!" Like I'm not the guy that's like, "I've got 14 songs and they're all going to go my way." I'm like, "Oh, your song's better than my song. Left work for me." You know, that's great.
Yeah, that works. That works. You mentioned taking a Greyhound to Hollywood. Most of us know the story there. But what was that like for you, being a young kid from the Midwest, landing on the streets of Hollywood? And I guess I would ask, do you have any advice for those with the same dreams that are going to do the same thing? It can be a very dangerous world.
Yeah, it definitely was. Listen, I didn't have the best support system with a mom and a dad, and my grandparents did the best they could, and I did things that we look back on in the book, and I'm quite surprised that I was even able to do it.
Yeah,
or that I got out of it. I survived out of it, and it's nothing I recommend. Just like, you know, getting dumped on the corner of Hollywood and Vine with a dream.
Well,
people are a little smarter now, you know.
Yeah, and you're a parent, so you totally get that feeling of, gosh, if my kid were going to do that right now, it'd be oof.
No, it was a different time. I had a different upbringing, and in the end, it was super. I don't know. I guess if I was to say, would I do it again? Of course, I would say yes, but it's probably not the smartest idea.
What were you doing to, what kind of jobs were you doing at the time to, you know, you have to put food in your mouth?
I used to steam clean carpets. That was pretty highfalutin. I used to sell Kirby vacuum cleaners.
Oh, I remember that. Remember those.
Did you do that?
No, but I had plenty of salesmen stop by the house.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I was one of them. You were like one.
Maybe so, yeah.
You know, lots of dishwashing jobs. I would do anything. One thing I learned growing up with my grandfather and my grandmother is we were not allergic to hard work. And I still love it today. And whether I'm making a record or working on a book or the LA Rats project or anything else that I've ever done, I like to work hard. I'm a hardworking person. I enjoy it. I get a lot of joy out of it. And my wife says, you know, she goes, you're never going to retire because you love working too much.
Yeah, well, it's fulfilling. I've got Nikki Sixx on the phone with me. Hey, Nikki, I recently heard something I'd never heard before. And this was before you formed Motley. But you turned down the chance to be in a band with Randy Rhoads. And Access TV recently covered this, Music's Greatest Mysteries. This was one of the topics. I mean, there's a lot of theories. We don't need to get into all of that. But it was such a tragic loss, and what an amazing talent he was, and just a good person, you know, by all accounts. And did you know Randy very well back then? And what caused you to turn that down?
Randy was wonderful. He was a great guy. It was the late 70s. There was Van Halen had come and gone. Quiet Riot was the big game in town. I used to go and just stand in front of Randy and just be like mesmerized. Yeah. You know, at the Starwood Club. A lot of my book is centered around this club called the Starwood that was a really important club, especially in the 70s. And, you know, there was this area where, like, you know, us musicians would hang out. Randy would, you know, hang out, and we'd play Asteroids. We were just kids. He was like this super, like, open, friendly, nice guy, shredder on guitar, always looked like a rock star. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd gone over and hung out at his house a few times. And I remember I brought like I brought like my bass rig over there, and him and his mom helped me pull it out of. I had a 1959 Volkswagen that was like barely running, and would go inside and sit in there. And they had these two records that were released on a Japanese label. I mean, they were like happening. And Kevin DeBrow, I mean, what a great voice. If you love that kind of a Steve Marriott raspy voice, he was amazing. And they had great songs, and they were going to get rid of their bass player. And I can't remember why, but, you know, Randy had asked me if I was interested. And then I'd gone to Kevin's house, and Kevin was playing me a bunch of stuff. And we were listening to Slade. We were listening to
Nice.
You know, Mott the Hoople, and they said they were looking for a new bass player. And it wasn't like a big deal. They just said they were looking for a new bass player. And I said, I think I'm going to stick with what I got.
Yeah.
You know, I got this idea.
Yeah.
And I'm like the kind of person, my wife says, oh my God, once you have an idea in your head, you will not stop till you make it happen.
That's amazing. So, what an amazing quality to have.
Well, thank you. And that was that. I say, so not like really a big deal. It wasn't like there was auditions and stuff. I think they were just looking to change bass players out. And then they got Rudy, who's wonderful. I've known Rudy since 1978.
We call each other
78. We call each other 78.
Yeah.
Bass Brothers, 78. And I've always loved Rudy. And Rudy took the gig. And then when Randy got the gig with Ozzy, you know, Rudy was like right there behind. And then, you know, and then it became DeBro, and then Motley Crue was happening, and then they became Quiet Riot, and then it actually really, you know, worked out great because they ended up, I believe, having the first number one heavy metal record with Metal Health.
Yeah, yes. And I love Rudy, too. I know that loss was really tough on him.
Oh, my God.
For so many.
Yeah. We always wonder what Randy could have done, you know, what some of these guys could have done.
Yeah.
And why God took them so early, you know, it's...
Right.
But it, you know, listen, that was a wonderful time. The late 70s in Los Angeles, and we had disco and new wave and punk and music coming in from the UK, and we still love the stuff like the Aerosmiths and the Montroses and, you know, all that great stuff. It was a great time to be young. It was a great time to be young. I can't even imagine trying to carve out a niche in the laptop world right now.
I know.
And just making records on laptops. I mean, we would rehearse like 10 hours a day, and it was like all we lived for. We woke up and just went straight to rehearsal, and that's all we all did. We rehearsed. We wanted to get better and better and better.
You know, Nikki,
human
I think...
interaction. Imagine that.
Yeah, no, I know. And I think rock has really suffered the past couple decades, but I do think we're getting back to that. And I see these young rock players, these up-and-coming bands, and they are doing it that way. They're doing... Mm-hmm. It's raw, you know, playing start to finish. That's how they're recording. There's no auto-tune, no computers. And it's a beautiful thing. So I'm glad that we're getting back to that.
It's inspirational. I run into people all the time. They'll be like, hey, my son's in a band. They're like in a garage band. They record only to tape. Like, I hear all these stories. And, you know, there's no better way to get great than to get in the game. Like,
right.
You want to be a great football player? You got to go out there and take your licks. You got to get on the field. You got to learn from your mistakes. And it's the same thing in being in a band.
Yep. Blood, sweat, and tears.
I'm happy that that's coming back because that's been some of the most exciting times of my life is rehearsal.
Yeah.
I mean, I love rehearsal.
Yeah.
Like, how can we get better?
Yeah, right. I love it. So let's talk L.A. Rats or, you know, like John Five was called
sure.
Rats.
Les Rats.
Les Rats. God, I need to brush up on my French. Let's talk Les Rats.
Les.
So the cover, I've Been Everywhere, we've been playing it here on KLOS. It's in the new Netflix movie, The Ice Road. Have you seen the movie?
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was cool. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did see it. I thought it was pretty good.
I like Liam Neeson.
I do too.
He also plays the same guy in every movie, but then I like guys like that sometimes. It's like, you know what you're going to get.
Exactly. And I'm a big fan of Taken, so.
I mean, yeah, it's always Taken Part 22,
right.
Part 23, right? Yeah, but that's cool.
Right. So, hey, what's a girl got to do to get the Les Rats to play somewhere here in Los Angeles? We got to make that happen.
God knows.
Yeah?
God knows. Well, I'll tell you how it all came together is I'm good friends with Scott Bruschetta, and he called me up, and he said, look, my label's doing the soundtrack to The Ice Road, which is a takeoff on Ice Road Truckers. And I said, that sounds pretty cool. And he goes, thinking about doing a lot of like travel songs, like road songs. He's got, you know, obviously he's got a huge country label.
Yeah.
And but he goes, I'd like you to, you know, write me an original. Could you write me an original? And it was, you know, at the time in the pandemic where it just really wasn't possible. And I was in Wyoming. And
yeah.
So. We talked about ideas for songs. We came up with a cover song. So we came up with I've Been Everywhere, which most people know as a Johnny Cash song, but it was also a huge hit in the 60s for Hank Snow. And before that,
right,
it was a huge hit in Australia. So the song's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
But it touched all the right points about, you know, the road, traveling.
Right.
And we relate to that as musicians. So
Yeah.
I said, okay, we came up with the song. I called John Five and I said, hey, I was talking to Scott and they talking about doing a cover of Ice Road. I mean, excuse me, of I've Been Everywhere. He goes, oh, I love that song. And so I kind of, in the beginning, was thinking it was going to be country rock, meaning Life in the Fast Lane by the Eagles.
Yeah.
Right? Not like country.
Right.
And I said, well, you just got to find the right singer to do this. And he said, why don't you just call Rob?
Yeah.
Like, you and Rob get along great and stuff. And John always has these get-togethers. So it's like I'm always over at John's house with Rob and, you know,
yeah.
We chatting and talking about music and stuff we love and stuff we hate. And I called Rob and I told him, I go, is this opportunity? Is this something? He goes, I love that song. I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is easy so far. That was like within like 8 minutes. We had already got like 3/4 of the band.
Yeah.
So because of the pandemic, you know, we would all like to be in a room and be working together. Just like, you know, cold pizza and just rocking out and telling dumb guy jokes, you know. And but we couldn't. So we made a template of exactly what we wanted the song to be like. And sent it to Rob, and like that later that afternoon, Rob sends that vocal through.
Yeah.
And I was like, "What is this guy, a pro or something?"
he's done this before.
I guess it's not his first rodeo. No, he nailed it, and really, the song was built off of the essence of Rob's, like how he sang that and rhythmically how we played to it. I mean, we had a guitar template out, but like then we got to really dive into it. So then we cut the guitars and the bass, and then what you usually don't do is cut the drums last, but because we were doing it this pandemic time, called up Tommy Clefetos, who's one of my favorite drummers. I love that guy.
Yeah.
He's such a monster.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm in. So he does two takes within 11 days from the first conversation to mixed, mastered, delivered. 11 days.
Wow.
And it was just like, it was so fun.
Yeah.
And I can always tell if a song is good, because I'll put it on, and if my 2-year-old daughter starts dancing.
Yes.
And she was like dancing and going crazy. I sent a video to Rob. Rob started laughing. Because, you know, Rob's like so gruesome looking, but he's actually one of the kindest people you've ever met.
Yeah. So that's really cool the way it came together. I hope you guys do some more things together. That would be pretty cool.
Never.
Hey, Nikki, I want to mention this too, you know, because you must not sleep. You've also launched a new line of merch called 6 on 6, which is available. I just want to throw that out there. It's available at NikkiSixOfficial.com. Yeah, I was checking it out. There's some really cool merch there, some cool shirts and other things.
Well, you know what I wanted to do is I've always had a lot of people ask me, like, do you ever sell anything, like, not only stuff with me on it, but stuff that I'm interested in? Like, I've always been a big fan of knives. So like we're releasing like a knife and we may have a knife collection, and there's like a lot of different elements of stuff that I'm interested in. So as you know, we're going to do it like 4 times a year, and I'm taking a lot of input from people, what they would like to see. So it's just kind of a fun thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The I saw the red pocket knife in there. It's pretty cool.
I think sharp. Be careful.
Yeah. Gotta be careful with the knives. Okay, before I let you go, Nikki, you're also in this little band called Motley Crue. The stadium tour with Def Leppard will be here. SoFi Stadium, August 27th, 2022. It's a long way off, but looking forward to it. Cannot wait. Do you have any surprises planned for that tour? And is it still looking good? It's on.
It's great.
Good.
I mean, we really did want to go this year. It's just, it's a little scary to go out there and have the tour maybe, you know, get canceled halfway. And I know a lot of bands are out there and they're testing the water. It looks really positive, super excited. You know, we have like 30 some stadiums in America, and we'll see, you know, maybe we might even drag it to Europe South America, Japan. We don't know yet. Right now, it's a little far off, but us and Def Leppard are super close. That's great.
Very cool.
And we'll just see what version of the stadium tour might fit for other countries if we decide to go. Maybe it'll be the same lineup. I know people are super stoked with the lineup. It's a good outdoor fun party evening.
Yeah. Well, I know we are really excited, so can't wait. Thanks so much, Nikki, for taking the time to check in.
Right. Always. Thank you. Thanks for the support.
And, always.
Maybe we'll jam a little Les Rats later today on KLOF.
You know we will. And hopefully we can have you and, well, whoever in the studio at some point soon. You're welcome here anytime. You know that. And in the meantime, you enjoy that open, wide space and fresh air.
We go back and forth to L.A. from time to time, so we'll make it happen. I love you guys. You guys have always been there in my life. It's always been there since forever.
Awesome. Yeah, since 69.
That's right. Wow.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you, Marcy.
Yeah, thanks so much, Nikki.
Keep rocking.
Until next time. You know I will. Cheers.
You got it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.